4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Still ahead on Central Time, we'll learn about some new grants awarded to Wisconsin that aim to train the next generation of farmers.
First, the White House just wrapped up a summit where President Obama urged Americans and international partners to work toward quelling violent extremism.
As groups like the Islamic State become more effective at targeting young people, the president said local communities and nations should work together to make sure teenagers and others don't become likely candidates for recruitment.
Federal pilot programs already underway around the country are reaching out to try and engage disaffected youth who might otherwise be attracted to these extremist messages.
Jeremy Suri joins us now. He's the chair for Leadership and Global Affairs and professor of History and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. Jeremy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on, Veronica.
Well, what's the overarching theme so far out of this White House summit on countering extremism?
Well, I think there are two themes. One is that countering extremism involves people working at the grassroots, that it can't be just from the top down. It has to be from the bottom up. And I think the second theme is that this has to be about a persuasive alternative message. It's not simply about being anti-extremist. It's about offering a positive message of democracy, human rights, and inclusion.
Now, the president published an op-ed piece in the Los Angeles Times saying the U.S. has met a lot of challenges in the fight against terrorism, but that the fight has evolved, and it's not about intelligence and military might. It's about an international coalition of community groups, of clerics, of governments, of youth leaders. It sounds, in short, like an uphill battle. What is your sense of just how big this challenge is?
Well, all international challenges involve questions of legitimacy, and that's what we're talking about here, Veronica. Can you convince people who might be dissatisfied with their circumstances that what you offer is credible and positive for where they want to go with their lives? So that's not new. The Cold War was a struggle over that. The early 20th century and Wilsonian contentions were about this as well. So that's not new. I think what makes this a more difficult struggle is how much more decentralized our mediascape is now, as you pointed out in your opening. And that makes this more difficult because it's harder for a president to influence what people are seeing and hearing.
Right, and it sounds as though they have had communications experts there reporting from the summit saying that the United States is actually being far outpaced by extremist groups when it comes to social media, things like Twitter and Facebook and other forums. Why is that?
The way I read it, Veronica, is they say the United States government is being far outpaced, mm-hmm. and that's because the United States government is a large bureaucratic entity and often very behind, as most professors are, on the newest technologies our students are using. That's the problem there. Hollywood is way ahead on these issues. Our entertainment industry knows what it's doing, but it's the government that has trouble understanding the new modes of communication, and that's always been a problem. That also is not new in this situation. The question is if the government can partner with people who do understand these communications.
The social media expert there who was reporting called this the challenge of our time. Do you agree with that?
I think that's overstating it. Maybe I'm too much of a historian, and I always see precedents for the problems we have today. I think the challenge of our time is a different one. It's making government more real and accessible for people, so people see the positive elements of what government does. And this is a subset of that problem. But governments have always been behind grassroots groups in communicating ideas and innovation. Good governing leaders are able to piggyback what's happening on the ground, and we need to do a better job of that. But we shouldn't expect the government to have the most advanced social media. It never will.
Well, it also sounds like the focus has changed from looking out for the organized terrorist attack to individuals who've been radicalized. How does that play out when we're looking at fighting extremism?
That's a great question. I think that cuts both ways, and it might be one of the most difficult questions, I think. On the one hand, it's obviously correct that we have to focus on individuals who might have access to weapons and other items that could cause extreme damage to people. It could even be the cyber hacker, right, who does a lot of damage. And so there's an appropriate reason to focus on that. But the downside of this individual focus is that it increases the incentives for surveillance. And I am very worried about the erosion of privacy in our society, the erosion of confidentiality. And I think there's reason to believe our intelligence services have sometimes gone too far in their surveillance activities. And I worry that this kind of rhetoric about the lone individual that we have to follow leads us to sometimes give up more of our rights than we really need to. And the trade-off is maybe too far in the direction of giving up those rights right now.
Did the White House or anyone at the summit say anything to address that issue of surveillance and do anything to assuage concerns like yours?
My understanding is that some of those concerns were raised, but I think where they were raised most significantly right before the summit was when the president was in California. In particular, he was at a conference on cybersecurity at Stanford and with Silicon Valley and other technology entrepreneurs. And a number of them, including the leaders of Google and Microsoft and others, confronted him on this issue about their concern for how he might be discrediting their technologies by implanting or allowing surveillance of transactions that are supposed to be private and information that's supposed to be private. And he heard that, but he also reacted in a very defensive way. I think that might be the biggest debate that comes out of this. How far are we willing to go in giving up our personal freedoms for security? Where do we say our personal freedoms might be worth protecting even at a slightly higher risk of damage to our society?
Where does that conversation happen when we're talking about the United States, but he's also the president talking about assembling a global coalition? So how does a conversation like that work?
Well, at one level, it is happening right now, not just at the summit in Washington, but in his meetings with foreign leaders. This is something that Angela Merkel in Germany has brought up, the leader of Brazil, and other countries have brought this up because of their concern about American surveillance. These other countries surveil us, but we do much more of it simply because we have more technology to do that. So there is a conversation among leaders, but I think actually there needs to be a conversation among citizens groups, and the kinds of groups that were at the White House have to form the kinds of international networks to be talking with other groups and other societies. And that hasn't happened enough yet. I believe that's beginning to happen now.
Now, going back to the new kind of terror threat that we are seeing more of today, individuals who become radicalized. let me say that again. What do you think we need to be looking for in terms of the people who are at risk?
Yes. Well, I think there are three dimensions to this that run in different directions, but they all are important. One is I do think we have to be smarter about trying to identify what are the risk factors, and that's where good social science research is important. And we rely too much, quite frankly, on racial profiling and things like that that we think tell us who the risky people are, but they don't. We need to do a better job of understanding what are the risk factors, which is to say, what are the socioeconomic conditions that create risky circumstances, and how can we first of all identify those? We need really good social science research. We really haven't done that for about 10 to 20 years when we were doing this in more of our urban research. People are starting to do that now. Second area, I think we need to then address those conditions. It's not simply about protecting against the lone or the handful of bad actors. It's about discouraging them and creating conditions that provide alternative incentives. And then third, we need smart law enforcement. And what we've seen, especially within our country, I'm sorry to say, is some not very smart law enforcement in the last few months. And that's relevant for this issue. We treat Ferguson as a separate issue, but it's the same thing. We need to be smarter in the way we use our law enforcement because we need it, but we need it to be effective and focused on real threats, not exaggerated reactions to other threats.
And critics have said that Muslim Americans are unduly stigmatized at summits like these, and the president was careful not to speak of Islamic extremism this week. He was instead using a more general term, extremism. Why is he trying to make that distinction?
Well, because if you're an American, Veronica, over the last 10 years, really, the greatest threats to your lives have been from Americans. You are more likely to die. We are all more likely to be harmed by someone we know, someone who lives close to us, and someone who looks like us, just statistically, by far. And we have this false image, just as we have this false image that African Americans are responsible for the majority of crime in the U.S. It's not true. So part of it is getting beyond the stereotypes and false images that we have. I think if you think about the shootings that have occurred in various parts of the United States in the last year to two, those are terrorist incidents, and those are the things that have to fall within this category as much as someone coming on a plane from another society. It isn't Islam that drives someone to do this. It's the conditions they're coming from and the ways in which Islam or white supremacy or some other ideology has been perverted. That's really the issue.
What do you think of that concern that maybe the takeaway from a summit like this is not one that implicitly promotes intolerance against Muslims?
It better not be, because that's completely counterproductive. If we come out of this with more intolerance and more stereotyping, then we're feeding the beast that we're trying to stop, which is we're trying to stop people from becoming so disconnected from society and so desperate that they turn to terrible ways of acting, and that applies to people in all kinds of groups. So we need to have a more inclusive message. What we haven't done as good a job of, Veronica, in the last 10 to 15 years is making people believe that our society is a society for good and a society that's inclusive. I believe those things are generally true, but we haven't shown our best colors, and we haven't done as good a job of communicating that. And I think that's the communication message. We're not selling America, but we are living by our ideals and making sure people can transparently see that. And when we don't do that, that hurts us.
Jeremy, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Jeremy Suri, the Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs and a Professor of History and Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin.
Coming up next, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is kicking in some funds to encourage people to train and learn to become farmers. We'll find out why this is a priority for one Wisconsin group right after this look at the news with Noah Ovshinsky.